Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome everyone. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am your host, Caroline Rutterman. We have a great show for you today. We are here with another repeat guest, Sally Morgan. So welcome back, Sally. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm so pleased that you invited me back because I think I have a lot of information to share for people and their animals, and I'm very happy that you appreciate that as well.
Absolutely. So Sally is a Tellington Touch or a T-Touch. And Sally does holistic therapy for pets and people. So Sally, go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I'm a holistic physical therapist located in the Northampton area, and I work with animals and their people. And I primarily started out working with horses and their people because I'm a nationally recognized dressage rider. And then as Tellington T-Touch work evolved in working more with small animals, my practice shifted and I became a physical therapist as a result of my experience with Tellington T-Touch. And so for the last 25 years, I've been doing holistic physical therapy, primarily with companion animals and their people, but I still do work with horses as well. I'm also a Reiki practitioner for people and animals, and I do craniosacral therapy with people and animals, and I developed a course system for learning craniosacral therapy with your pets, and I do emotion code work, and I teach yoga, and I'm the author of an Amazon best-selling book called Dances of the Heart, Connecting with Animals.
You have an amazing resume. I love it.
Thanks.
So when you say that you do holistic physical therapy, how do you understand the holistic side of that? And how is the holistic physical therapy different than regular or more traditional types of physical therapy?
Holistic work in general goes beyond, something going on with the body. It's a holistic approach, meaning it's the mind, the body, the physical, mental, emotional well-being, and the spiritual health of whatever you're working with. So it encompasses all aspects of the being, as opposed to just doing 25 exercises to help the knee after an ACL tear. We look at all the things that fed into that injury or trauma and release the trauma when you're doing a holistic work. So you're really looking at, emotional wellness as well as physical wellness, because so often physical injuries are a result of problems going on further removed from the body. As you're probably familiar, so many injuries start in from our outer auric layers and come into our body gradually over time. And those can be a result of emotional trauma, spiritual trauma, and just difficulties in one's life. So with holistic physical therapy, we can really look at every aspect of the being and really bring wellness to the whole system of the dog or the horse and the person and even the whole family that the animal lives in.
So I really appreciate some of the Facebook videos that you've posted about T-Touch, the Tellington Touch technique. You have some, great. There was a video that I watched about fireworks and how pets respond to fireworks. And I know that my cats run and hide. They're both super, super sensitive, one of them in particular. And the video was talking about some of the shock points and some of the techniques that that you can do as a human companion to our little furry companions that can support the kind of calming them down, dealing with the really loud noises and the traumas. This technique seems really, really empowering for people, and I'd love to know a little bit more about the why it helps to be able to kind of support people in helping their household lives.
Well, our best example of how this all started back in the 80s when Linda was developing Tellington Tea Touch work. And in fact, one of her very first demonstrations was held at Hampshire College with Moshe Feldenkrais, who she worked with for a few years. And later on, I was working with her in the mid to late 80s, and we had several trainings in New Hampshire. And one of the issues people with horses frequently have is how to get the horse in the trailer. And until you've ridden in a trailer, you don't even have a clue how much noise and rattling is going on in a particular trailer. It may look new and nice, but if it's not built well, it can be very frightening for the horses. So one thing we did, which Temple Grandin has also championed, is putting herself in the position of an animal. We would take a ride in the trailer, but we had so many techniques to help horses understand how to get in the trailer. And a lot of them incorporated many people. And as Linda used to say, you know, when you have 15 people standing around, everybody wants to help get the horse in the trailer. And there are people that do it in a really mean, uncourteous way. And there's a very upset owner who has to be somewhere and the horse won't go in the trailer. And then you've got these other people that are trying to be helpful. So one of the techniques we use are, you know, five or six poles that we're holding, and we kind of gradually make kind of a pen behind the horse. Sorry about my dog. And we walk the poles in closer and closer. And so the horse just gradually gets more comfortable and easily walks in the trailer. And when we were first learning this, everyone said, oh my gosh, you know, where am I going to get 10 people at a horse show to help me load my horse? But in fact, people need something to do. When a horse won't get in a trailer, everybody's anxiety is up and the horse is getting more and more nervous, and it's very challenging. So early on in the work, it became a big principle for Linda that we empower the people that are with the animal to make changes that are helpful for the animal and to get help themselves. Because so often when something's, when your animal's sore or hurt or injured or having a training issue, the person gets very emotionally involved and upset, and we need to give them something to do that can be helpful to both them and the pet. And in fact, in Linda's book, Tea Touch for Healthcare, I wrote a whole chapter about, and that's for human, to work on humans, I wrote a whole chapter on using Tea Touch for empowerment, because if you have pain in your own knee, you can use Tea Touches to help alleviate that pain, and it takes you out of being a victim and puts you in a position of power. So that's so important with our companion animals. I mean, Tea Touch can not only help your dog be less stressed during a thunderstorm, but it can help keep you calm, and it gives you something to do where you're really thinking and changing your relationship with the animal. So, you know, doing Tea Touches for a variety of things like seizures, problems in the car, you know, fear of loud noises, you know, your dog's worried about other dogs coming near him, your dog's worried about strangers coming in the front door. Using Tea Touches in these different circumstances can really help calm you and help you stay focused on all the things that you're doing to help your pet, instead of just being in a panic and trying to remember stuff and not knowing what to do. Because these techniques are so profound and they work so effectively and they're so seemingly simple that really anyone can use them. So it's really, it can really change people's relationships with their animals when they take a Tellington Tea Touch class, even if it's just a couple hours.
So, Sally, tell us, what is Tea Touch? What is Tellington Tea Touch?
Linda Tellington is an internationally recognized animal expert, and she grew up in Canada in a family with a lot of children, and they were the famous Riding Hoods, because their last name was Hood. And they used to do these demonstrations riding in a long line from the father on a tall horse down to the littlest child on a small pony, where they did like synchrony riding. And Linda was an extremely talented horse rider from the beginning. And then she married a man named Wentworth Tellington when she was young, and he was much older. And they started a riding training facility in California years and years ago. And she did competitive endurance riding and was unbeaten for years and years with her Arabians. And they used a lot of Wentworth Tellington's cavalry experiences, teaching people sort of drill team riding techniques as a way to improve your own riding skills. And if you've ever tried to ride, even in a pairs class with someone, it's so difficult to take two horses, even if they're matched in their stride, and keep them right next to each other. It takes a tremendous amount of riding skills. So her students were quite successful, and she made quite a name for herself. And she, that marriage broke up, and she was still riding and, you know, doing endurance riding and showing and things. And she met someone else who introduced her to sort of spirituality and body work. And she ended up in a Feldenkrais class with Moshe Feldenkrais. And she decided to do the whole training over a period of a couple years. And in that first class, she was on the floor and she was thinking about this and her relationship with animals. And she thought, I need to find a way to do this with animals because I think that it would help them. And at that point, she was learning about non-habitual movement. And so some of the early things that we did with T-Touch were just like picking up a horse's hoof and making three or four circles each direction with the whole leg, moving the horse's face in a certain way, just rubbing your hand in a different way down his neck. And her grandfather had worked with racehorses in Russia, and he always won. He was very successful, and he was asked often how he was so successful. And he said two things. I never run a horse unless he tells me he can win. And he does this kind of body work and massage with his horses, which, you know, many years ago, because Linda's 84, people weren't even thinking about massaging animals. So she had all of this brewing in her mind. And she, one of her early experiences, she was working with horses at a place in California while she was taking one of these trainings. And there was a mare they couldn't catch. And she went out to the farm after one of these classes, and they finally caught the mare. And she just rubbed her hands around her head and moved her ears and her mouth. And, you know, just really, I think primarily mouth and ear work is what she did with her. And then the mare went back into the field. Well, the next day, the place called her because they couldn't believe it. The horse had come up to the fence and was waiting for people to be with her.
Aww.
So she saw this immediate profound change. And so from there, she went on to develop, you know, what we now call T-Touch. Over the years, it was for a long time called TEAM, which was Tellington Every Animal Method, because you were a team member with your horse. I mean, I've been with this work for 35 years, so I've seen it, or actually 40 years now, I've seen it really evolving. So what it has evolved into is a specialized approach to the care and training of horses and our companion animals, and now also we use T-Touch with people, which in my role as a conventional physical therapist, I've been using T-Touch for years, particularly with great success for people after a stroke or with a neurologic problem, something like Lyme disease or, you know, a brain injury, things like that, because it's really good at reintegrating the right and left side of the brain and helping people coordinate how they move. And that translates over to what we do with animals as well. So T-Touch is, for some people, they just think it's a circular kind of body work, but there's so much more to it than that. And we have basically four aspects of T-Touch. We have body work. We have what we call the playground for higher learning, which is a kind of an obstacle looking course to a beginner. We have different equipment we use. And then the fourth, and probably as you can appreciate as a Reiki person, intention is part of what we use with our work. And intention is, you know, remember your potential for perfection. And that way we're not imposing, you know, an expectation when we say remember the potential for perfection. So that applies, you know, no matter how hopeless something is seeming, from a person's perspective, maybe not from the animals, you are just reminding them of their potential for ideal function. And that is a huge shift. And that is a big aspect of all that we do with T-Touch.
Sally, can you tell us a little bit about what a session looks like? When somebody walks in, or maybe you go to the person's home or they come to you, what does this all look like?
It's hard to say it precisely because I see so many different types of animals for so many different reasons. I have many animals that come, like, let's say, a very antique kitty in his little box, and his person will come, and the kitty may just lay in his box the whole time he's here as I work with him, and he purrs and he sleeps, and he might get up and have a little walkabout, and then goes back in the box and purrs and sleeps while I'm working with him. And I do see a fair number of animals that are quite senior or that are possibly crossing the Rainbow Bridge. I also see a fair number of animals with behavior issues or training problems. So one common one I see is dogs that have reactivity to other dogs. And so often there's something going on in that dog's body or a prior injury where he's super protective of his own body. And then he's been tumbled on the doggy playground or, you know, by something else in his life, a human, or even just like falling in the car. So now he has some pain in his body, and that makes them super protective around other dogs. There's usually one of the things that comes from A Course in Miracles is that, you know, fear or that anger comes from fear and is a cry for help. And so when we see a dog like this, who's seemingly really angry and barking at other dogs and jumping at his leash, it's usually because they're really afraid. So then in that case, a session might include some body work with the animal, some explanation to the person, and then we go out in the yard or my kitchen, depending on the weather, and we'll work over some of the aspects of the Playground for Higher Learning, the obstacle course that we use with T-Touch, to help the dog feel comfortable in his body and really get a sense of balance. Animals that are not in physical balance are also not in emotional balance. So we try to get them in physical balance so that then they can make choices instead of reacting. So one of the primary things we'll use is a Tallington T-Touch labyrinth, which has like a 90 degree turn at the end. It's like two interlocking capital letter Fs. And we go very slowly around those turns where the two capital Fs meet. And that can teach us a lot about the dog. For instance, with horses that have problems with their stifles, you know, they won't be able to make that turn. They'll stick one leg in the ground behind and just pivot on that leg. And what we'd like to see is them marching around the turn, lifting 1, 2, 3, 4, each leg in turn. And with dogs, they often will just walk out, or they'll start to do one of the coping things that we see, like fooling around or fidgeting, or, you know, they might get into a fight flight response, which is what we see with dogs that are not good with other dogs. So we'll do body work while they're in the labyrinth. We'll work them over some of the equipment. And then I might bring in a stuffed animal. We do a lot of work with lifelike looking stuffed animals, and just bring that animal. Like when I was in the yard with a dog a couple of weeks ago, I had my stuffed dog probably 200 feet from the dog in the labyrinth. And he was an adopted dog and the person didn't know him very well. And she wasn't sure how he was with other dogs. Well, he became absolutely terrified just seeing a stuffed dog standing on the lawn 200 feet away from him. So that gave us a lot of information about what's going on with that dog and how we need to build his confidence. And then once he's good with the stuffed dog, we'll use a neutral other dog, a live dog, and walk that dog around the yard and closer to the dog in the labyrinth so that he can see that he doesn't need to be frightened. And he's not overfaced. So one of the other things we do with T-Touch is to always take things in what we call chunk down pieces, so that if the dog is becoming upset with anything, but like in this case, the dog is afraid of another dog's presence. If he's too afraid of that stuffed dog being 200 feet away, we'll back that stuffed dog up to 300 feet away until he's showing no signs of nervousness, because we don't want to overface them. We want to gain their trust by showing them that we understand that they are afraid. And that's a very different way of working with animals. I mean, a lot of people do things like habituation, but that's very different than really respecting them and watching what they do. So that's a very different kind of session than more of a body work based session where the animal is just in my office and he's not moving too much. And, you know, I might be working with sometimes a person helping their dog not pull on a leash. That's another very popular thing that I do. And really with the T-Touch harness and the equipment we use for that, a dog can stop pulling on the leash forever in one session. And a lot of that is education to the person, because the dog and the person have been pulling on each other for some time by the time I meet them, and helping the person stop pulling on the leash and have it just be a little bit limp so that the dog can find his own balance can be a big learning moment for the person. So in that case, the person's going to be going through the labyrinth with me and learning how to relax their hands on the leash so that the dog has the opportunity to stand in his own space. So sessions really vary with T-Touch. And a lot of times I will be doing T-Touch on the person so that they can understand what their dog is feeling. With the leash pulling dogs, so often the person's shoulder is just so sore from pulling on the dog that they can't really relax it. So they might get a little more body work on themselves before we start to put them back in the combination with their dog.
Yeah, it sounds like it sounds like a lot of the sovereignty of the animal is being respected with that. I think even how you kind of mentioned, watching this animal go through, adjustments so that they can choose to make a choice that's different than instead of just reacting. You know, it's kind of like allowing the animal to like adjust and then make a different choice. And I think people forget that. It's like animals are in a lot of ways just like we are. We're animals, and we make choices all the time. And just because that animals don't think and act the way that we do, that they shouldn't be judged the way that our animal nature works versus the way that their animal nature works. So it sounds like you are really trying to get to understand how their sovereignty and how their animal nature is respected.
Yeah, everyone with a pet, no matter it's a cat, a rabbit, a dog, a horse, you want a harmonious relationship with that animal. You want a close connection with that animal. And so much of traditional training for dogs and horses has been breaking down that relationship, which has left so many pet lovers frustrated, and just not knowing what to do when they've got a dog with a behavior issue. And, more and more people are getting dogs from shelters, and some of these dogs have had really bad experiences in their past and not really good handling. And a person who's just had dogs for their whole life and not really had any challenges can be really concerned with a dog that has issues that they are not familiar with. And, T-Touch is so supportive for the person to embrace them for their challenges that they're coping with their pet and help them understand the pet. Because when somebody's got a dog who's, let's say, not very good with other people, it really takes some of the social aspects of pet caring out of your whole relationships with other pet lovers. And so it can be really difficult for that person emotionally. And with T-Touch, you can really find some ways that your dog can be with other people and dogs in a way that's not overfacing them and that's safe for you and them. And that's, very, very empowering and rewarding for the person who has an animal who has some problems. And it's a huge aspect of T-Touch that we really view the animals as equals and really as our teachers. And whenever we have a class in particular, I've had 60 classes with Linda over my lifetime with her, and she always emphasizes that the animals are our teachers and that we are here to learn from them, and that the people that bring the animals to the classes are also our teachers, because we're learning, about their experience and their frustrations or what went well for them. And we really help people see their animal in a new light. In the early days, people would come to a class like I did with my horse, and I'm thinking I'm going to have to explain my horse and say all the things that he's done right and all the problems I've had with him. We don't do that anymore. We look at the dog, we look at the person, and we see what, his habit in the past has been to pull on the leash. And then we reframe everything, because until the person can see that their dog is not a leash puller anymore, it's really hard for the dog to change. So we have to really work at the heart of the problem between the person and the dog, and not just, take the dog and I can get the dog to stop pulling in about 2 seconds. But if I don't train the person how to do it, and that the dog is no longer pulling because now he's balanced, I haven't accomplished, very much for the person. So we want to work with them as a pair and respect them as a unit and really see the animal as a sentient being who has his own issues in his life. And, our relationships with them are really about them explaining to us things. It's, I often think about my niece who has a new baby, and the baby's only way of communicating right now is to cry. So she's crying when she's hungry, tired, wants to be held, wants to be put down, needs her diaper trained. And now my niece is gradually learning what each of those things mean. And it's no different than how we are with our pets. anyone who's had a pet can tell you that their cat has five different meows and different things that they do to say, I want dinner, I want a treat, my box is dirty, I don't like where that other cat is. And so much of companion animal life is helping people understand the language of their animals. And that's what T-Touch is so valuable for.
Absolutely. My cat has a an alarm clock purr because my cat helps me wake up usually around like 7, anywhere between 7:15 and 7:45. And he comes right over and he does not stop purring until I get up. And it's a very specific purr.
But yeah, it's so nice to wake to a gentle purr instead of a loud meow with the food dish being thrown around the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes he's changed his strategy where he just goes and meows really loudly at the door. So I actually have to like get out of bed. So he switches up his strategy for that. But yeah, he has his own way of communicating. And it's very much specific to like that time frame to helping me get out of bed. And I ask him, I tell him, can I sleep in tomorrow morning? I like to 8:30 tomorrow. Okay, I don't have to get up for anything. And he usually respects that. You know, when we have that kind of like dialogue, even if it's just me verbally telling him that, it's like we have that rapport. He knows that no matter what, at that time, I will get up and feed them because that's part of the routine. But if I go back to bed, you know, he'll kind of acknowledge in his own way that that's also time. So, yeah,
well, there's one of the things we do with T-Touch, like you with your cat, is make sure that we always talk to animals in a full sentence and that we always say please and thank you. And that makes such a big difference. When I say to my dog, could you please come over this way and stand next to me and sit quietly, they nearly always will do it. And Linda says part of it, she believes, is because we're making a clear picture in our mind of what we want them to do. And if you have a barking dog and you just keep yelling, you know, shut up, dogs don't understand that. And so commonly now we hear that no bark, no bark. Dogs don't know what that means. But if you say to them, I'd like you to be quiet now, please. Thank you for letting me know the mail is here. You get a whole different response from your dog. And that goes for every animal. And we always say thank you to them. I mean, why wouldn't we? There's a famous experiment, a one-day thing that a dog trainer named Victoria Stillwell did where she talked to her employees all day the way that we talk to dogs. Come, sit, stay. Never said thank you, never said please. And at the end of the day, a couple people quit and one person said, why are you so mad at me today? She realized that, you know, what a disservice we do to dogs by not speaking to them with a courteous and polite, you know, professionalism that we use with our coworkers. Yeah. So why not say, I'd like you to do this? And earlier today, I don't know what was going on, but I just said to my dog, on the next commercial, I'll get up and you can have another treat. And he just sat there and I forgot about it. And he got up and he went and sat in the kitchen at the commercial. And I was like, oh, right.
We made that promise. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know it's so different when you like treat them like they understand you. I remember I went on a date with this guy and he was like it was like a second or third date or something. And he was, you know how like affectionately people call their dog like dum-dums or idiots or say these kind of things that you wouldn't say to like a human child. And he was like, oh, he doesn't understand what I mean. And I was like, but what if he does? Like in my mind, I was like, I'm never going to go on another date with this person, you know, just because
absolutely
of the way that
he didn't even respect his,
I mean, I know he respected his dog, but like there was sort of just like such a lack of communication in the way that he described. Yeah.
The whole way that people are in the world with animals. I mean, they just don't know. I mean, so much of it is lack of information. And they keep telling people, thank God that people who have a master's degree in sociology or a PhD in human psychology are now studying animals. And that, you know, like one of the most important things we've learned about dogs lately is Chaser, the border collie, who knows over 2,000 words, that was taught to her by her father, a retired psychology professor at a small college in the Southeast. And he knew how to train a child. He knew a lot about language acquisition, and he knew some of the prior studies with gorillas and parrots teaching them words. And he knew that he could teach his dog all these words. And it was so hard for him to get the first publication in the literature because people just didn't believe dogs could do it. And, you know, he was so careful in his research to set up double blind and any person could ask the dog to do things and he would be out of the room. And, you know, they have this whole thing called the Clever Hans effect where a horse was seeming to do math, but he was really picking up on very subtle cues from his owner about when he was getting to the right answer. And, you know, nobody really looks at clever Hans and says, how smart was that horse to notice his person's breathing and how it sped up as he got closer to the correct answer, you know? Right. But anyway, that's been haunting the world of animals, animal training and psychology for years. And so he was careful to eliminate all that. And, you know, now, you know, his first book came out many years ago, 10 years ago now, and the dog is well known and has been on TV and things. And thanks to people like him and not people who are veterinarians and animal behaviorists, you know, we're able to just throw out the window anything we thought of animals and study them in a whole new way. And we're, I mean, there's a recent book called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? The answer is, I don't think so.
Because, but, you know, it would, you know, it actually, it really.
So much to give us. And yeah, someone like your friend there just is so misinformed about animals. I mean, they do know what words mean. And they do know, and like when you say dumb, you know, you might think of Dumbo or you might think of Dopey, the Seven Dwarfs, but you're not thinking of, you know, Einstein. And that's going to have an impact on your dog.
Absolutely. And, you know, it also to allow that these animals understand us would also, and to recognize their own consciousness and their own sovereignty would have effects on how we behave. You know, it would to publish, to acknowledge these kind of things would have consequences in theory, right? To our own actions and the way that we want to live our world. So sometimes, you know, to just say that doesn't exist is staying small or staying, you know, not making any necessary changes.
I think it was Gandhi who said, you can tell the, how people treat each other in a culture by looking at how they treat their animals, and you'll know how successful they are by how they treat their animals.
Yep.
And so we're, you know, they really are our responsibility, especially the ones we bring into our homes. And it's so important that we meet their needs on their level, and not try to impose our will on them in ways that they can't adjust to what we want.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sally, can you tell us a little bit about what some of these harnesses that you were kind of mentioning that allow dogs to regain their balance from having kind of developed that pulling relationship from walking with their person? Can you tell us a little bit what those harnesses are all about?
Sure. T-Touch, you know, as I said before, we have four aspects of T-Touch: the playground for higher learning, which we talked a little bit about with the labyrinth, the actual body work, the intention to remember your potential for perfection, and then also equipment. So in the horse world, that is a whole variety of different bridles and lead lines. And one thing we use for dogs and horses are ACE wraps. And you can think about that in the way that Temple Grandin described liking a hug to help her feel herself when she was upset. But we use these wraps on dogs and horses in a whole different way to give them a sense of their body, to change their proprioception, help them know where they are in space. And so from our use with the wraps, we started to look at and develop our own harness for dogs. For many years, we used a harness from a particular company that is no longer made the way it originally was. And I saw one of the very original ones. I have a middle level of this kind of harness. And boy, it was really different from what they're made like now. And from that harness, we were still having problems. The dog was not in balance. We were using head collars on them, like little halters like you'd see on a horse. We were putting them on dogs. And everyone's now familiar with the gentle leader. We had halties developed way before that. Because we thought if we could influence the dog's head to have him turn towards us, then we would have them not be so fixated on barking at the mailman across the street or something. So from there, we decided that what we needed really was to have some better way to influence the whole dog, because we're really looking at posture and balance. And so the harness we use now is a kind of an H harness. So the shoulder is completely free. There is nothing impacting the scapula at all. And those original harnesses we were using had a band that came right across the scapula. And this is a huge problem with many types of harnesses these days, is that the dog's shoulder can't move freely. So our harness sits a little further back from the elbow as well. So the dog has plenty of freedom to move his whole front leg. And then it sits a little lower on their neck, so it's not coming over any of the tissues that can be harmed by pulling on a collar, for instance. And then most importantly, our harness comes with a leash, which has a clip on both ends and then a sliding handle in the middle. So the harness will attach to the front of the leash. The leash will attach to the front of the harness and also on the top of the dog's back. So now you can hold the dog in two hands. And with this, it first of all makes you stand more in balance. So if you've got a person who's been sort of, you know, following along like a skier on a boat behind their dog, now they're next to their dog and they're holding the leash in two hands. And it helps the person breathe. The breathing is a big part of what we do with T-Touch, noticing your breathing, noticing your dog's breathing, changing your posture to be more relaxed. So now you've got the dog in these two hands, and as soon as the dog pulls, you have a way to rebalance them. We just give them a signal, depending on the situation, on the back of the harness usually, and then follow up with the front of the harness to bring the dog into balance and ask him to wait. And it's just remarkable how effective these harnesses are for helping dogs that pull. I mean, there was a dog I worked with recently. Well, recently, I think it's been 2 years now. She was a terrible puller, and they were using a popular type of harness that the vet and the so-called trainer had recommended. And the dog was young and bouncy and exuberant and needed lots of walks, but it was terrible. She just was impossible to walk. And if she was getting to the point where she would go in her crate with her butt facing out and wouldn't even let them put the harness on her because she did not want to go with them because it was just such an ordeal for everybody. So she didn't even think I'd be able to get this new harness on the dog. I met the person in a parking lot somewhere, sat in the back seat, the door open for about 10 seconds, had our harness on the dog in just seconds because it undoes everywhere. You can take the neck off and all the way around the middle, everything's adjustable. And had it on the dog in just a second. Adjusted it to her size also very quickly. It didn't take much, and brought her out and walked her around, and she never tried to pull. I mean, she just stayed right next to me. So even just the proximity of walking next to your dog instead of having them trot in front of you makes such a difference in their balance. And our harnesses really help achieve that. But they also give the dog real freedom of movement. So the harnesses are really important. And just a little side note, from our work with wraps, somebody was watching how we work with wraps, and I think other people have stolen this idea from us, but that's how the guy that developed the Thunder Shirt developed the Thunder Shirt, from watching what we did with wraps. And so the Thunder Shirt is really derived from T-Touch wraps. And you mentioned earlier working on the animal's ears in one of my videos about thunder and lightning, using a T-Touch wrap can also help calm a dog during a thunderstorm or with loud noises.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I'm a big fan of however things kind of, if something is good and useful, let it spread, let it evolve, and when whatever directions, the more these things are spread, the better, in my opinion. So can you tell us a little bit about, if someone's at home and they're listening, and you know they have an animal who either pulls on the lead or is really dealing with a lot of fear in their body? You know, we all have animals that are super, super sensitive. And do you have any kind of techniques that people can practice at home that you can describe to us from radio land as best as you can verbally?
If you're not driving, put one hand over your heart and then put the other hand on top of that hand. And this is how you do a lot of the circular T touches. So you're going to imagine the face of a clock under your hands with the six towards the floor. And you're going to push the skin through your shirt with your two hands all the way around the face of that clock, from the six all the way around to the 12, back around to the 3, back to the 6. And then that little quarter of a circle back up to the 9 after you've passed the 6. And then you release. And you do that taking a breath in as you're going up and around that clock face. And you're really imagining the numbers on the clock as you go, because that engages your right brain. And come back up to that 9. And that is what we call a heart hug. Heart hugs have been shown to increase what we call heart coherence, which has been documented by the HeartMath Institute, because it's going to get your breathing and your body's rhythms in sync with your dog's when you do this, because it really calms you down to do these heart hugs. It's really good for your own anxiety, and it's really good for your pet. So you can do the same heart hug on your dog by just, or your cat or your bunny, by just putting your hand on the animal's chest and imagining that face of a clock with the six towards the floor, and just make your hand go in a circle and a quarter around that clock, pushing the skin gently under your hands back to the nine, and then releasing. So that's, you know, a lot of the tea touches are circle and a quarter based on that idea of seeing the face of a clock. And as I mentioned, that engages your right brain because you're imagining the numbers. And one of the things we've learned about tea touch through using a mind mirror, which is a kind of piece of equipment where you put little sticky electrodes on your head and see what your mind is doing in your brain while you're experiencing different things. And what we found is that all of the brain waves are activated equally in both sides of the brain, the right and left hemisphere, for beta, alpha, theta, and delta waves in the animal and the person while you're involved doing the circular tea touches, also in the corners of the labyrinth. And for a long time, we didn't even know animals had beta and alpha waves, which are, you know, for logical thinking, who would have thought an animal would have beta waves? But this research that Anna Wise did in like 1982 with Linda is really fascinating. So doing that circular touch, and this is why it's so effective for somebody after a stroke to do this work, because it engages the right and left hemisphere of the brain equally in all four of these brain waves. And so it can help the right body, can teach the left body information that it may have lost as a result of the stroke. So a lot of people like me who have been doing T-Touch since 1981 become ambidextrous, because you end up doing the touches with your right hand and your left hand, and you just use both sides of your brain so often doing the work that your right and left side become almost equal. So the heart hug is a good thing you can do with your pet at home. And the other thing you can do is go to my YouTube channel, which is Conversations with a Corgi. And as Caroline mentioned earlier in the show, there's probably 620 episodes there now on YouTube. But numbers like 15 to about 45 are all about tea touch. And there is a video for every single one of the Tellington tea touches, and then many on the different kinds of equipment and different ways we use the wraps, and some information about the confidence course. So you can go there and just practice with your pet and, you know, or on yourself or on your child or someone else in your household. And then my book, Dances of the Heart, Connecting with Animals, one of my friends read my book and she said, I learned tea touch from your book. And I said, really? That wasn't part of the book to teach tea touch. And I said, show me what you're doing. And she was doing beautiful tea touches on herself and her cat just from reading in my book some of the conversations that I had reported about Linda working with me at different clinics with my horse when I was first learning tea touch. So you have many resources. And then the tea touch people have a website, teatouch.com. You can go there. There's videos and classes everywhere. So you can learn from so many resources about tea touch for you and your animals. And we have people that specialize in llamas and every kind of animal.
Now, does the tea touch techniques, do they go from one animal to the next to the humans? Like all systems are pretty similar for these. Are there adaptations for a bird versus for a horse versus for our children? Or are they pretty much in sync with each other?
All pretty much the same, although you mentioned birds, and birds are a little bit different. We often do tea touches on the bird with one of their feathers, but a lot of birds are pretty playful and try to grab the feather. So you have a different way to approach them. They might be on their perch and you just kind of sneak your hand up and do a little circle on their toes. And we might not use wraps on birds the same way we do with another animal. You know, you might just use a wrap a little bit on a bird's chest to change his posture a little bit, but, you know, just like kind of put it around him and lift him a little, but we wouldn't, well, not even lift, support. support him a little. But, you know, we wouldn't be putting wraps on a bird the same way we would with a horse. But really, from the T-Touch perspective, all animals are equal. And so with every single animal, they're a unique individual, no matter what species they are. So we try to do what that animal needs, like what is going to help that animal? What do we know that can be a benefit in this circumstance for this dog this day? If I am, you know, for instance, at a parade and I'm sitting next to a dog who's really nervous and the people didn't have any idea this was going to be a problem, and I don't have wraps on me, I'm going to show the person how to do touches on the animal's ears. And maybe the person has a sweatshirt tied around their waist that we can put on the dog and create sort of a thunder shirt to help calm him down.
And are a lot of these techniques day to day or more when there's an imbalance happening?
So many people use T-Touches every day with their pets when they're sitting on the sofa in the evenings and relaxing, or like you in the morning when your cat's with you. Just doing a few of these little circular touches around their ears and then running your hands. We have a technique called Noah's Mark where you just, all of the T-Touches are named after animals because Linda, as I said, looks at animals as our teachers. And in the beginning, they didn't have names of animals and it was really hard to remember them. And that was only important because we couldn't really talk about what we did if we didn't have a name that we could remember. So Noah's March is one of the touches, and that's where you just run your hands slightly over the body down to each of the feet and the tail and the ears and connect the animal to the earth. So even if you only do three T-touches, three little circles like the heart hug on them, like I just explained, around their ears, and run your hands over their body, they get the benefit of that information from that one little circle throughout their body. So a lot of people just spend 5 minutes a day working on their animal. A lot of the people learning T-Touch will say, all right, today I'm going to do just clouded leopard with my pet. And I'm going to do it on my dog and my cat and just see what happens. And then tomorrow they might watch my next video on lying leopard and they'll try that with their animal or on their child and see what happens. So, you know, these T-Touch, it works on the nervous system. It's very much like craniosacral in that way and very different from massage. And it's a very light kind of touch generally. And it makes a big change in the nervous system because it's not invasive. It doesn't engage the body's defense mechanisms in any way. And it really, to do it well, you're really thinking while you're doing it. So it really calms you as well and creates that connection between you and the animal. And we frequently talk about that idea of heart coherence, where you and the animal are really in synchrony with each other. And T-Touch really promotes that, both from our philosophy of animals being sentient beings and unique individuals and, you know, deserving our respect and seeing, you know, looking at them to see what they're teaching us, but also from just the work that we do with them.
That's great. Do you, Sally, do you have any events coming up or virtual or otherwise? Like what's going on in life for you guys?
I'm developing an online craniosacral class for animals, and I've already done the first section of that. If people are interested, they can still join and I can send them that class. And we're going to do the next round in a couple of weeks at some point when I've got, you know, probably 15 people in the group at this point. So I'm just kind of figuring out how far we'll go because I won't have an animal with them to do live. So I just have to adjust some things for that. So there's that going on. And if people join the T-Touch community, which is an online Facebook group, I've done three videos for them about the central nervous system and its anatomy and how T-Touch affects the spinal cord and the brain. And I am hoping to do a podcast that will be my book in an audio form at some point soon.
Great. And we just have a few moments left of the show, but do you have any last words of wisdom that you would like to throw out into the universe?
I think the most important thing that I can urge people to do is to listen to their animals. Animals are trying so hard to speak to us, and we hear some of their voices, but not all of them. And, you know, for a long time, people were talking about being a horse whisperer or whatever, but what we really need to be is animal listeners. And, you know, animals are not that different from us. You know, wild animals are animals in our households, even other humans. you just have to really listen with your whole mind, body, and spirit, and you'll see so much richness in the creatures that share the planet with us. And there's, like I said, lots more information about these things on YouTube, on my Conversations with a Corgi, and my website, sallymorganpt.com. There's lots of information there, many articles, including my TED Talk, which is about connecting with animals. And then my Facebook page is Sally Morgan PTCST, which is physical therapist, craniosacral therapist. And that's where I do Facebook Live several times a week. That eventually go to Conversations with a Corgi on YouTube.
Amazing.
And people can ask questions there.
Great. So we're just running out of time. So thank you so much, Sally. If anyone wants to listen to this interview or any other past interviews, you can always go to ReikiNorthampton.com/radio archives and catch the replay. So thank you, Sally. You can stay on the line. Have a great weekend, everybody. And we are going to close out. Actually, we're probably just going to switch right over. So have a great weekend, everyone, and be well.
Thank you very much, Caroline.